You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravet, Matt Spaeth, and Jeannie Smith, revealing the truth about the food we eat. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravet and I'm the host of your show today. You can find us at foodintegritynow.org or on Facebook at Food Integrity Now. And today on our show, we have a very interesting guest. We have Rosalind Peterson. Rosalind is California president and co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, which is ADC. The ADC was formed in 2006 to protect agriculture from a wide variety of experimental weather and atmospheric testing programs. She's also the founder of California Skywatch, which was founded in 2002 when she began researching atmospheric testing and weather modification. Rosalind, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you today.
Well, we're excited to have you. And I know a lot of people have heard the term chemtrails, and they really don't understand what they are. And first of all, why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself and who you are, and why did you start doing your research on this very important subject?
Well, my name is Rosalind Peterson, and I have worked in agriculture my entire life. I was born and raised on a working farm in Mendocino County in Northern California. I then went from there. I worked for the Mendocino County Agriculture Department at the county level. And then I became USDA. I worked for California United States Department of Agriculture in the Farm Service Agency and became a certified crop loss adjuster. And that took me traveling around Central and Northern California to assess crop losses that were happening in the state of California during the course of a year. And we had to determine the amount of the crop loss. We had to determine the type of crop, if it was man-made or natural phenomenon, weather-related events, and assess the amount of the losses. So I traveled extensively throughout California. So having the experience of being born and raised on a working farm and then traveling and working for the Department of Agriculture in California, the experience that I gained was substantial during a number of years. My education is I have a Bachelor of Arts degree at Sonoma State University. And that was in environmental studies and planning. And that had a positive effect because agriculture was my main interest at the time, and how agriculture is impacted by various weather and other types of events. From there, I've had a varied career, but one of the things that I can say is that I've always been engaged in, even from backyard to some sort of agriculture, almost my entire life. The issue that came up in 2002 for me was that I began to notice that the jets were leaving persisting jet contrails in our skies, and they were changing the climate, changing the weather. They were in other words, not allowing direct sunlight to reach the earth as in previous years. And as this increased and the amount of the trails began to increase here over Mendocino County, I began to take photographs beginning in 2002. I began to document what was happening, and I decided on a research project at that time to figure out what was happening, what the impacts were, and I went from knowing nothing to putting in almost now 10 years this April of research into this subject. I talked to people who had been doing this since the mid-1990s, and they were invaluable help. I had other people doing research as well. So from all of us working together, we began to, over the time, began to tell a story. And the story was first played out in my website, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com, which you can go to as well. And from there, this led in 2006 to the Agriculture Defense Coalition. And between the two websites, there are approximately 40,000 documents and thousands of photographs of different sky events and document studies, university studies, government documents, any and all research I could find on the jets and why we were having unusual spikes in aluminum, barium, strontium, boron, arsenic, and magnesium, and other things. And so this has taken me down looking at a puzzle that had about 1 million pieces, and I had no idea of what it looked like in the end. And I still have only portions of the puzzle, but I know a lot more than I did when I started. And also, I have some idea now of what it looks like.
Well, Rosalind, many people aren't even familiar with the term geoengineering. When I talk with people, they go, geoengineering, what is that? Do you want to explain to our listeners what is geoengineering?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Geoengineering is a word coined back at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, I do believe. And it was coined more than 30 years ago at this point. And Edward Teller probably was one of the first ones to use the terminology. And they were talking about, at that time, being able to do atmospheric experiments or ocean-type experiments in order to control or talk about global warming, for example. They wanted to talk about cooling the earth and other types of experiments, military experiments. There was a whole list of things. So the term goes back a long time. Now, in 2006, I went to a meeting at NASA Ames. There was a group of geoengineers, people that got together to talk about geoengineering in 2006. And at Stanford University, one day was opened where the public was invited to attend. And at this meeting, a group of these geoengineers decided that they would talk to the public about this issue and admitted during the course of their presentation that they had kept the word secret for more than 20 years at the time, because they thought that the public wasn't ready to understand or hear the word, and also that people might oppose it and rise up and say no to this. And so the idea was that they would keep it and they would work on it so that they could present it to the public in something of a way that it would be okay with the public to kind of introduce it gradually and then to go full force into pushing a full-scale geoengineering program.
Wow.
Geoengineering can involve several things. And it's important to remember that ocean iron fertilization, in other words, putting iron into the ocean, is one type of geoengineering scheme which has backfired and has been bad for the ocean environment. Some other experiments are already ongoing or proposed. Weather modification and atmospheric geoengineering means changes to the process atmospherically so that, and these changes would bring about experiments so that they could use our Earth's atmosphere as a giant physics laboratory for experimental purposes. Geoengineering, or climate remediation as the terminology is evolving a bit, means that they're going to go up into the atmosphere and artificially try and change the temperature. They're going to artificially put up particles and chemicals into the atmosphere, which they admit will come down. And these geoengineers admit that it's risky and there will be side effects, air pollution, water pollution, acid rain, because these particulates will return back to the Earth. The interesting part of this is that they still want to conduct these experiments because they're saying, well, we're going to save the world from global warming. Well, the Bipartisan Policy Center admits that this climate remediation or geoengineering not only is risky in their October 4th, 2011 report, in addition, they admit that it's risky and that their definition says, but it's likely to just mask the temperature. It's not likely to reduce global warming, and it's not likely to have much effect, except that you would have to keep those particles and chemicals into the atmosphere forever, or the masking effect would disappear and the people would find out what the real temperature is. But geoengineering cannot make the climate better. It can't do anything about adverse weather events. It's not going to help anything. It's just merely considered a masking fix so that we can continue to pollute and do other things, and that they want to definitely experiment with the environment.
And how are they doing this, Rosalind?
Can you be a little bit more specific?
Okay, so how, you know, you talk about, you know, that spraying stuff into our atmosphere. I guess when I speak with people about chemtrails, they say, how can this be happening on such a wide scale and people not know about it? How are they doing that? Who's doing this? Is it the military or who's conducting this geoengineering?
Okay, let me define a few terms here, which would make it easier.
Okay.
Chemtrails is a word I don't use unless I'm absolutely pushed into kind of giving the reason that I don't use it. And most people who look up into the skies and they see these white plumes that persist and they crisscross and go in circles, jets flying in every direction, leaving different kinds of trails which turn into man-made clouds or white haze. And so the term chemtrails was actually coined by the military, I do believe, at some point. And in the 1990s, the mid-early 1990s, the U.S. Air Force came out and put out a statement that chemtrails were a hoax, that the universities and they had investigated, and that the word was a hoax. It was one of the first documents I looked at because I went straight to the U.S. Air Force website, typed in chemtrails to see what I got back, and the first thing I was looking at was hoax. And when I looked at the report put out by the EPA, NOAA, NASA, the Air Force, and all of these other agencies who put out essentially a group report, they all claimed that this was, that the jet trails were normal, natural water vapor, and that this was all, this had happened since 1919. That was but prior to the invention of jet engines. For in 1919, for someone to fly up and leave a jet trail would be that we see today would be absolutely impossible, because we were still living in the times of mostly open cockpits at that time and small, very, very tiny planes who would not be leaving contrails like we see today. They couldn't even get that high. They didn't even have the technology. Jet engines didn't start to be introduced until World War II, and the United States had none of them. There was experimental models from Germany, small ones, and there was experimental ones from France. And we didn't have any jet engines until to even look at until after World War II, when we brought some home from Germany to look at what their technique and invention was. And it was many years thereafter before jet engines became more prominent, and they were small at first. So for anybody to say that what we're seeing today happened years ago and looks like what we were seeing in World War II or World War I is an impossibility. Although they did use smoke as camouflage, which they list as a definition of contrails. So going back, the Air Force decided that chemtrails was a hoax, and this is what they put out to all the legislators and all the elected officials, state, local, federal, everywhere, the press, and gave this information to the press. And this is stuck to this day. The people that bring up the word chemtrails are marginalized quite heavily because the Air Force and all these agencies say it's a hoax, and the press looks at these documents and the astrobiologist from NASA stating that chemtrails are a hoax and that only nutcases would believe in a hoax. So therefore, knowing this early on, as early as mid-summer 2002, I made sure that chemtrails stayed off the word stayed off the California Skywatch website. And I refused to use the terminology because I knew that my voice would be marginalized when I started to speak out if I used the term, which is still true today.
Right.
The second thing is that we're going to talk about the jets. The impact of contrails is that water vapor is a very potent greenhouse gas. And when mixed with other things like carbon dioxide or other things, the gas becomes more potent. And water vapor is part of what we see is water vapor along with jet fuel emissions, which are highly toxic. The combination of the two has impact on memory. It's like what comes out of your gas pipe when you drive the tailpipe, and it's those type of emissions, but the engines are huge, and what they produce is much greater than what your car would produce. But the toxics inside the jet fuel are have agricultural crop production damage with them, increasing asthma, pulmonary problems, respiratory problems. So when you look at the EPA reports, for example, on jet fuel emissions, you will see that they even talk about impairment of memory. They talk about not only health problems for people, but animals and crop damage. It's an extensive list. So what you're seeing is not benign. This little plume is not benign in the environment. Now, NASA goes on to say that the plumes turn into man-made clouds. The man-made clouds change the climate. This is admitted in books, university studies. You can go to Stanford and Mark Jacobson. You can go look at all of these different documents and studies, and they admit that this changes the climate. It also exacerbates global warming because increasing cloud cover and haze and increasing cirrus clouds trap heat. And when they trap heat, they warm areas like the Arctic, of which aviation impacts are tremendous with regard to warming. They warm colder areas of the world like Alaska. And so that's what's going on. So this is kind of a broad picture of, in other words, the jets and what I've learned. The people ask me all the time what the jets are spraying, and other than jet fuel emissions and use of aluminum-coated fiberglass particulates or chaff by the military, I cannot find any reports or documentation on what the jets are spraying or what the purpose is for having all of this water vapor emitted into the atmosphere, because they can fly so that they don't release as much water vapor. But if they reduce the amount of water vapor, they would actually allow for cooling in Alaska and the Arctic, which would mean those areas and other areas in the world could actually cool down instead of being in high melt phase if we weren't allowing the jets to produce so much water vapor within the system.
Okay. So you're saying that you have not found any evidence of what they are spraying other than what you just mentioned.
That is correct.
Okay. So what about the allegations of the barium, strontium, aluminum? How does that come into play?
Well, when I started doing research and I started looking at atmospheric releases and upper atmospheric releases and looking at Navy and Air Force and NASA websites, looking at government websites and university websites, what I soon discovered is that there were entire programs having gone on for years where the space shuttle and rocket programs, especially involved with the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, and NASA as co-partners in many cases, and universities as co-partners for studies, that aluminum, trimethyl aluminum, aluminum oxide, barium, strontium, and other atmospheric releases were taking place through the use of rockets. They were conducting ionospheric experiments. For example, in 2009, the U.S. Navy CARE program charged aerosol release experiment delivered an aluminum oxide dust cloud all the way from the Gulf of Mexico to Maine. Many people saw it, and they were so proud, the Navy and NASA were so proud, they even released a video showing what happened and how they did it. But they put up an entire aluminum oxide dust cloud over the entire eastern seaboard. Those particulates will come back to Earth, polluting air, the water, the soils. And other experiments, the night cloud experiment, U.S. Air Force and NASA.
What is the night cloud experiment?
The night cloud experiment is where they put trimethyl aluminum into canisters and they shoot them up on rockets. And once they're superheated, then they produce these night clouds, which you can see at night because they're very spectacular. When you actually see these huge plumes that they create, and it creates a chemical atmospheric experiment. But they don't use the jets to do it, as far as I know. The only research that I've seen from the Department of Defense, Pentagon, U.S. Air Force, University of Alaska, is I only know that it's an Air Force NASA program and that they use rockets to do it and do the releases.
And why are they doing it?
It has become evident that the atmosphere above us has become for the military and for various agencies and universities a research area. And there are no laws or rules against conducting research in our atmosphere at any level. Therefore, in order to conduct varying types of research, they then can go up and they can do these different types of atmospheric experiments using our atmosphere as a physics laboratory. The problem is that most people don't know that these experiments are going on, and when we're beginning to see the results on the ground because we've got increasing health problems, we've got spikes in aluminum and barium and other chemicals. We're starting to see increasing asthma. We're starting to see tree declines across the United States. It is concerning that the results of their experiments are beginning to show up, and that since very few people know about it, they're not taken into consideration in why certain events are taking place, such as tree decline.
Do they admit that they're doing this?
Yes, I have hundreds and hundreds of documents. And yes, it's online. Anyone can go and look up aluminum or barium on my website. They can go to the Agriculture Defense Coalition, hit the categories section, which gives an alphabetical listing of everything on my website, and they can go either to the aluminum or barium section or upper atmospheric testing section, and they can read about these experiments and they can see the government documents because I've made them available.
And so geoengineering, is that word a word that they use?
Geoengineering has not been a word that they use for either weather modification experiments or upper atmospheric testing. It's a word that has been reserved for the conducting of experiments in putting up particles and chemicals to control, supposedly, but it's really mask, Global warming and climate change.
Okay. And I understand that there was a U.S. patent on geoengineering. Do you know anything about that?
There's several U.S. patents revolving around geoengineering and atmospheric releases of various times. And so, yes, there's many of them, and they're under the U.S. patent section of my website.
Okay, so that, can you give your website again for people so they can do their own research? We always encourage people when they listen to our show to do their own research and, you know, not believe everything we say, but, you know, discover it for themselves. So what is your website?
My website is agriculturedefensecoalition.org.
Okay. And is the other website, is that still active too, the Skywatch?
Yes, CaliforniaSkywatch.com. Yes.
Okay, great. Well, Rosalyn, we're going to take just a short break to listen to our sponsors, and we will be right back. This is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240. Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard Water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard Water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard Water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Hi, I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now. And I've just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of Rocky Mountain Sacred Journeys. And we'd like you to come join us on an amazing adventure of fun and self-discovery. Please join us for one of our ongoing trips to Hawaii to swim with the dolphins in the wild. To find out more about our ongoing trips, please go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. Rosalind, I have a question for you about the weather modification. When we spoke a few days ago, you mentioned about the weather modification that's being done in Colorado and how that is affecting California and vice versa. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, be happy to. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, is required to list any ongoing weather modification programs. And there are currently about 66 ongoing in the western states, which cover California, Nevada, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, Kansas, Texas, and some Texas modification that covers New Mexico. The country of Mexico is modifying the weather, as well as the country of Alberta, Canada. So there's a massive amount of weather modification ongoing in the western states. Pacific Gas and Electric Company, as one example, modifies the weather in California, but also there's weather modification going on in states surrounding Colorado, except for the state of Nebraska. And there is a big program in Wyoming that was initiated with the permission of Colorado. And it's a program that started in 2009 to put more snow in the Wyoming mountains than ever in recorded history, which they have done every year since. It's a 10-year program. This 10-year program is designed to put more water into the Colorado River to benefit Nevada and Southern California.
Wow.
It's not designed to benefit the residents of Colorado. And so what happens is that when that program went in, Colorado started to suffer severe droughts in many areas that never had droughts, or they would get excessive snowfall in one area, or they would have drought conditions in another. And when your Senator Salazar was in the U.S. Congress, I discussed this issue with his office many times. And his staff wanted to ignore the issue, hoping that it would go away. However, I was tremendously concerned because the ranchers, people in agriculture in Colorado, those that depend on water resources have no idea that their weather is being modified to such an extent as it is today, and that this extent will be ever increasing. And also the states to the west of Colorado and to the northwest of Colorado, as they take more water and they modify the weather more to take more water out of the weather fronts that come through, Colorado is likely to see less and less rainfall as these other states decide to take more rainfall out of these weather fronts as they go through.
Well, I noticed last year that the western slopes were just inundated with snow, and I'm on the Front Range of Colorado, and we hardly had any snow. Now, this year so far, the western slope, you know, they're desperate for snow. So do you think this is attributable to the weather modification?
Absolutely.
Wow. And is that...
Absolutely. And the reason I can say that is if you look, I have a, pardon me, a Colorado section on my website that goes into weather modification programs just in the state of Colorado. And your listeners are invited to go and take a look at the website and look at the weather modification programs and see where you are. And note that if the rainfall or the snow is being enhanced in one area, it can put another area into drought or reduced rainfall.
And don't you think people would be outraged if they really understood how this works?
Yes, I do. And one of the things that happens is that when you have too much snow, then you have to truck in food for cattle and sheep and horses and different things. It really impairs crop planting. It impairs your ability, when you have too much snow, there's more local expenses because people, roads have to be plowed, other things have to happen. Sometimes even cattle, they have to fly in food for cattle in distant ranges, things like that, or other animals. The issue also becomes that there's liability associated. If people knew that there was liability, that they could sue the companies doing this because of the impacts on them from snow enhancement or rain enhancement or drought, then the public would have the ability to be able to collect damages from these companies or states or cities that are doing these programs. And so they don't want the public to know. And I am willing to bet that not one weather forecaster, meteorologist in the state of Colorado is telling you that the snow that you are receiving, the enhanced snow or rain, or the drought conditions may be caused by the weather modification programs, or that you're going to have snow and a lot of it because they're seeding the clouds so that you will have more snow in your area.
So do you know what companies are doing this? Is there a way people can look this up?
Yes. You can either go to the weather modification section of my website, and there's a listing there. You can go to the Colorado section, and I put the spreadsheet I got straight from NOAA. And if you click on this spreadsheet, and it gives each year and which programs, but it tells you the amount of chemicals they're using. It gives you the square miles of the program. It gives you the month in which they're happening. It gives you the location, county, who's doing it, and whether it's a snow enhancement or precipitation enhancement program.
Huh. And so when I look up in our skies, like today and early this morning, there were crisscrosses everywhere, and yeah, the trails were spreading out and filling up the whole sky. Is that what you would call cloud seeding? Is that what they're doing?
Well, when they cloud up your sky and they restrict the amount of direct sunlight, the jets, reaching the earth, they are changing your climate. They are reducing photosynthesis, which all plants need to grow and be healthy. They are, in other words, this process changes your local weather and your climate, and pretty dramatically too, temperature-wise as well as, in other words, night temperatures and daytime temperatures as well. Now, weather modification programs are either done from ground-based cloud seeding, or they're conducted by small airplanes. You would not normally see a large jet conducting cloud seeding activities that we know of, because the corporations listed on this list from NOAA state that these are small weather modification or smaller weather modification companies.
So who's doing the the ones that I'm watching look like big old jets? I mean, I watched them the other day, and they were over Pikes Peak. They were just looping around, and so much so that people were calling the news station to ask what was happening.
Yes, and this is how man-made cloud cover is created. Mm-hmm. This is why the jets change, and just the water vapor that turns into man-made clouds, mm-hmm, has this process of changing the climate. Now, what other activities they're doing up there or not doing and the reasons for them, I don't know. But normally you will see them hit very heavily just before the weather meteorologist forecasts a rain event. Mm-hmm. And you'll see them all of a sudden, these massive clouds will appear in haze and jet contrails. It happens here all the time. The minute that they say clouds are coming and rain is about to happen, the jets come in and turn our skies from blue into massive contrails everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they either stop the rainfall by dissipating it, or they enhance the cloud cover so that they can have a rain event. So this is not clouds from a front, according to NASA. And all this information is available either on the NASA section or the weather modification section of my website, or you can actually go to the NASA website, and this is pretty clearly explained on their website as well.
So, and I know you don't talk about anything that you can't document, and I totally respect that. But so when I watch these jets that do this clearly, and they're not flying in a normal flight pattern, do you think they're military jets? Do you think they're commercial? Do you have any theories on that? And I know you're not going to talk about anything you can't document, but I kind of want an answer to that.
Okay. Military jets are the ones that are flying the patterns,
mm-hmm.
or jets that were hired by the military to conduct these types of exercises.
Okay.
The reason I know this is because I got the FAA maps for Mendocino County, and there's very few commercial airline flights that fly over us from any of the major airports, which are Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose. Those are the three major airports in the Bay Area. Any flights that go toward the state of Washington heading up north or over to Hawaii or other areas do not usually cross our county, and if they do, only in one location coming and one location going. But there's very few flights. The intra flights that cross our county, according to the FAA maps, are the ones where jets circle around and do the crisscrosses and loops and all these different angles. And their flight paths do not go back to the major airports, but go back to military bases.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is most of what I have seen, I've even had experts look at the photographs and look at the footage and have clearly identified them as military activities. Now, commercial airlines, when you look at the flight paths on FAA maps, which you can ask your congressman for your area because they can get them for you, is that you will see that commercial airlines, they only carry so much jet fuel. They fly in a perfectly straight line. They go from point A to point B as fast as possible because they only have so much fuel, and they're on time schedules. No commercial airline has the time to do loops and crisscrosses and crosshatching and zigzags and half circles and all these other things that we see in our sky on a routine basis because, one, they would run out of fuel, and, two, the passengers would begin to note that the plane was making all these turns.
Right.
Three, they couldn't keep a time schedule if they tried. So when we see the jets doing these odd things, these big jets doing these odd things, they're definitely engaged in weather modification. I mean, there's so many studies on aviation in the global atmosphere and the impact of aviation on the atmosphere that, I can't tell you. There's books on it. There's so much information on this that shows that aviation is having a tremendous impact. So once we talk about aviation impacts, you can say, well, commercial does so much, but then the military is one of the largest users of jet fuel, much more than the commercial airlines. And we have that statistic up on the website as well. So the amount of fuel that's used by the military, and the military has a limited amount of money to fly big jets or to contract for them. They have unlimited pilots. They have fuel to burn because we, the taxpayers, pay for it. They can do circles and all kinds of programs. And there's no constriction on them doing what they're doing.
Right. And when I talk about that in this area, the comments I get are, well, look, you've got Peterson Air Force Base, the Air Force Academy, you've got several military bases in this area. And, you know, people will say, well, that's just, you know, they're doing maneuvers and stuff. But people will also agree that they don't remember seeing the skies look the way they look these days, 10 years ago.
That's correct.
Yeah, and if to me, if people just look up, it's a natural curiosity of what in the world's going on up there, because it just didn't used to look this way. And I also find that on some days our skies are totally clear here. And, you know, for the ones that say, oh, this is just, you know, commercial airliners. And I thought, well, it's Tuesday. The skies are clear. I guess there's no, you know, airlines flying today. So there's it just doesn't make, it's not even common sense to think that, you know, these are just our commercial airliners, you know, just leaving some contrails that dissipate. I mean, there's a big difference.
There is a big difference. And what happens with commercial airlines, for example, here on Mother's Day, I'll just use that. On Mother's Day, we had the most beautiful blue sky last year that you can imagine.
Right.
And yet, a lot of people, in other words, there was a lot of flights. We had Thanksgiving. And what did we get on Thanksgiving Day? Clear blue skies. And the day after Thanksgiving, when there's a massive amount of traffic, one of the high travel days that week for airlines and Christmas, a lot of times we're perfectly clear. Well, all of a sudden you realize that the military's probably gone on vacation, taken some time off, and they're not doing as many flights as usual. So all of a sudden our skies clear up. Why is that?
Right. Well, you know, it's just, besides the fact that they're conducting these atmospheric test up there, and we're kind of the guinea pigs to it. Why do we need to care about this? Let's tell people, what's the result of what's happening.
Well, let's talk about the jets first.
Okay.
And when you have, not only do they change the climate and the weather in local areas, but they can change the climate over large areas. They reduce the amount of sunlight hitting the ground. So we're beginning to see from these impacts people having a lack of vitamin D because their children and themselves no longer absorb enough vitamin D through their skin from the sun. This includes animals as well. So we see things happening now that rickets, the CDC has noted that rickets, a bone disease, not known since the turn of the century, when children, instead of going to school and being outdoors, worked during the days in the coal mines. And rickets was the bone disease for weak bones, things like that, were prominent. Now, all of a sudden, the University of California, Berkeley, the CDC, Kaiser Permanente, a big healthcare system here, have all come out, and there's more reports all the time, that there's a lack of vitamin D from increasing cloud cover. Well, where's our increasing cloud cover coming from? If we didn't have the jets up, we wouldn't have increasing cloud cover. We would have normal clouds. The second thing is that when you restrict the amount of direct sunlight reaching the earth, solar panel power production is reduced 30 to 60% in some areas, even in California in the sunniest areas. The third thing that happens is we have a lack of photosynthesis. If you are always covered over with haze and man-made clouds, you don't get the direct sunlight hitting your trees and your plants and your crops in order to have them absorb the sugar needed to grow strong and healthy. So the minute you have increasing cloud cover, you can have a loss of crop production. You can have crop losses, which people say, oh, it's something, it's this or that, or it's weather, it's climate. But when you've got the jets changing your weather and your climate on a local basis, when you've got them enhancing, when you have weather modification programs enhancing or denying precipitation in some areas or snow, when you add to that the factor that the jets are beginning to reduce the amount of direct sunlight we all get, if you don't have enough sunlight, then depression starts to be, like in Alaska, there's depression issues that show up. There's all kinds of different health issues. And the vitamin D section on my website goes into the many problems that are associated with a lack of vitamin D, of which taking lots of vitamin D all the time, enriching the pharmaceutical company, could be stopped because if they just had direct sunlight, no jet contrails around, we would get enough direct sunlight to make up the difference and make up what we need.
And it also makes me wonder, this is what just popped into my mind, about lack of sunlight and causing depression. Who stands to gain from that?
The pharmaceutical companies.
Right, right. Anyway, go on. I just wanted to make that point.
So the jets, besides the jet fuel emissions and the toxicity of jet fuel emissions, create a number of problems. In other words, decline in tree health. They exacerbate global warming because when you're cloudy at night, the temperatures don't drop below 32 degrees enough for to kill the pests that attack the trees. And this is a problem in Colorado. And instead of addressing this man-made cloud cover that's going on from the jets, they're talking about, well, we'll just cut down the trees, and that's fine, but why don't we save the trees and get our direct sunlight back? Because sunlight acts as a great disinfectant. Now, the other thing that struck me, KGO Radio in San Francisco, Ron Owens, several years ago, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, had a program in which he had one of the prominent scientists about flu epidemics and pandemics on his show for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so talking about this issue to death in the newspapers and on the radio and everywhere. I almost turned it off, but I didn't. I just kept it on while I was driving. Well, Ron Owens asked his guest, Gil Smolens, he said, what would stop an epidemic or a pandemic? What would just stop it dead in its tracks? And he said, direct sunlight.
Wow.
Ron Owens was so shocked by the answer, he asked the question 3 separate times within 5 minutes, giving me a chance to pull over into the, you know, off the freeway and start taking notes like crazy. Because all of a sudden it began to make sense. Why do we have more molds, mildews, fungus around here? In other words, if you don't have direct sunlight acting as your disinfectant, then you're more likely to have flu epidemics and flu pandemics and viruses.
Huh.
And so that connection for me began, I began to realize that the impacts of this man-made cloud cover from the jets was having a whole host of issues. And that's why black mold began to show up in some areas where it's hot and it used to be so sunny, black mold would never grow. All of a sudden, black mold is growing. And pests are proliferating because the man-made cloud cover is warming us up at night and the temperatures don't drop enough to get us into a situation where it kills the pests and the molds and the mildews and the viruses that attack trees and other things, and our crops. So then it occurred to me there was something else going on that occurred to me about the same time, is that if you started to have more and more of this man-made cloud cover, not only would your crop production drop, but that the University of Illinois, who had a corn crop study, showed in their corn crop study that having equal rain and direct sunlight, corn crop production went up. The minute that you had increasing cloud cover, corn crop production dropped. And there's been a few more studies since that time because they started to look at this issue to see what, you know, what was happening, why this was occurring in some areas. So not all areas are affected the same, but when you have more and more of this man-made increasing cloud cover, you're going to have human health effects, animal health effects, you're going to have environmental effects, crop production effects, watershed effects, and lots of other things going on.
I'm wondering how the lack of sunlight affects genetically modified crops, if there's a difference. Do you know anything about that? Have there been any studies?
Well, they're trying to work through making some crops so that they don't need as much sunlight. They're working on crops that are aluminum resistant. You can go to Monsanto,
right,
and you can look at the different things they're doing. They're trying to shorten the growing season so that plants only produce one crop instead of several. But it's going to backfire because we need the wide variety of fruits and vegetables and plants and trees and flowers and all the things that make the system on Earth work.
Right.
And you can't genetically modify all of them. So they may have a few that may work for a while, but these monocrops eventually fail because something will attack them.
Right. Well, you know, I always feel that if you follow the money on any phenomenon, you get to the bottom line of it. So, you know, with the whole experimentation and weather modification, you know, there's a reason this is being done. And I truly believe that, it's not in our best interest. And I think it has a lot to do with greed.
Oh, I think it has a lot to do with greed. And I also think, though, that a lot of scientists have become unethical.
Right.
Or for their own welfare and their own ability to make money at the universities and different things. I think that the military and the universities and these private companies have all agreed to go in and conduct atmospheric experiments along with the military. So there's a whole host of things where the government funds at some point, and then they can all engage in these types of atmospheric experiments. Now let's go to geoengineering.
Okay.
Falling under the category of atmospheric experiments is geoengineering. That means that weather modification, the weather changes by the jets and the jet impact on the global atmosphere. And now we talk about geoengineering, and we talk about changing our oceans, adding chemicals and particles to the oceans, to the atmosphere. We talk about cloud whitening projects using salt. We talk about, in other words, adding sulfur or aluminum oxide to the atmosphere in order to supposedly reduce global warming, which I don't believe for a minute. Those projects are now being discussed at the highest levels of governments, the UK Parliament, for example, and the US House Science and Technology Committee held hearings. US congressional hearings were held in 2009 and 2010. There was a report issued, and the UK Parliament and the US House agreed to work together on global geoengineering governance back during that time period between 2009 and 2010. In addition, the Bipartisan Policy Center issued a report encouraging research and to conduct atmospheric testing using particles and chemicals into the atmosphere to supposedly mask global warming. Even though it's risky, they're saying that it should be done. So you have a few geoengineers, not a great number of them, who have decided that they are the gods of the environment and that they should hold sway over the people of the world, including us here in the United States, and keep us out of the talk, and to decide policies that will cause acid rain, air and water pollution, because they admit readily, and you can go to the geoengineering section of my website where I have links to all of these things, my PowerPoint presentation, and also the speech of David Keith at the 2010 conference on geoengineering that was held in San Diego. And that's where he talks about having planes emit water vapor at a certain rate and injecting aluminum oxide gas into this stream that will produce very small particles that will stay in the air for a period of time and then come back down to Earth. And he goes through the whole process if you want to know what the plan is and how it works. And they're already gearing up with having the jets manufactured to or altered to put out more water vapor so that they can put this aluminum oxide gas, this aluminum gas into the system, so that they can form these small particles into the atmosphere. He goes on and explains the whole thing. It's very good. And if you want to know what the plan is. But the thing is that they all admit that it's risky. But the driving force is we must experiment, and that the public, the world, must live within our experiments, even though it's risky and may have unintended consequences, and that the people of the world should not have, including us here in the United States, should not have a voice.
Right. And, you know, that sounds a lot like what Monsanto is doing and other biotech companies with their genetically modified foods. They're experimenting on us. You know, there's been no long-term studies. And, you know, it sounds like a very similar scenario.
That's correct. But see, they make the claim that, well, we must do the research so that if there's a catastrophe, we can fix it, without realizing that they could be creating the catastrophe that we're now looking at.
Right, exactly. Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and what I'd like to talk about is, you know, we've talked about this is all happening. What can people do?
Okay, three things. Long Island Sky Watch. There's a group there with Long Island Sky Watch. And they took a resolution forward to their legislator about these issues and the economic impacts of the jets and the chemicals to be used in geoengineering programs. They did this late last year in November and December. Their resolution is excellent, and I encourage all of you to contact them, go to their websites, read this resolution, and start talking about the economic and health impacts. And their resolution is very good because it outlines and gives you the links to the information and the documents. And they're taking action. They're continuing this year for asking for legislation and investigations into why they have higher levels of barium and aluminum in their area. They're beginning to talk about the issues. And other people in different areas across the United States and around the world are beginning to take action at the local level through education. And I don't mean taking and just saying, well, I believe this, and trying to sell somebody on your beliefs. I mean taking the actual documentation, taking things that people have already researched for you and saying, look, this is not good for us. These weather programs are not good. We should sue these companies. We should stop this weather modification because I'm living in drought because you enhanced the snow somewhere nearby. And it doesn't matter. Anybody now can modify the weather. Anyone, I can hire any company to modify the weather, and there's no laws against it. So we're at the mercy. So when you talk about, yes, there's a lot you can do, education is really good, and then when you have the documents and you can use my website as a research tool, you can go out and you can stand tall. And I'm going to tell you, Long Island Sky Watch is a prime example of the people of a community joining together to stand strong and tall and to take action to protect their communities and their children and their health.
I think they're doing something kind of similar to that in Hawaii. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yes. Michael Murphy and several people are in Hawaii, and they're doing something similar, working with legislation to begin to make a dent there to protect the communities there as well. There's another group that's in South Indiana, I'm sorry, who's really been starting to work on this issue as well. So I will help anyone, of course, who wants help. I will do the best I can, but Plumas County, for example, in California is taking action against PG&E weather modification programs. They've been investigating and holding county meetings and taking other action, city meetings, county meetings, to take action to investigate and to go further within this problem as well. So, because they get snow enhanced all the time, and boy, you should see their health and their costs in that area from some of these weather modification programs.
Well, I'm hoping through this show that our listeners will really start to understand what is going on. And like you said, go to your website. Again, that's, you want to give it one more time, Rosalind, so
sure.
We have it?
Sure. It's AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. And if you go to the category section, you will find a listing alphabetically of the different topics that are covered, and you can find the Colorado section of the website as well.
Right. And, you know, education is the key, and then taking action. And it's not just about having proof so that you can convince somebody else that it's happening. It's about taking it a step further and taking some sort of action, because this doesn't just affect a few of us. It affects all of us. So thank you very much, Roslyn. We appreciate you and all the research you have done. And we'll continue to watch this issue, and hopefully there'll be more places, you know, that start taking some action, like Long Island and other areas of the country are doing. So thank you again for being on our show, and you are listening to Food Integrity Now, and we will be back next week with another great show. Thank you very much.